5318008. No, flip it over and read it upside down. It's hilarious. Trust me. Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 80. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. THX1337. And all right, I was only six, but does it seem that people made a really big deal about the 70s coming to an end and about 1980 coming around? I mean, that didn't happen for the 90s. You know, we had Battlestar Galactica in 1980, and there was a movie Star 80. I mean, nothing like that happened. There was not, like, the A-Team 1990. Although, you know what, I will say, though, that in the rap and metal scenes, it did seem that everyone started paying attention to time. Like, that was around the time that everyone was just calling out the year, or just talking about time in general. Was it all due to some awareness of the coming of the year 2000, as if that, you know, was really significant? The fin de siècle? Who knows? But you know what? It's not really interesting enough to explore any further than what we just have. So, anyway. In this episode, we'll complete the Deadpan trilogy of interviews. Since last episode, we had Christopher Moore. The one before, we had John Butchergross. So, there won't be a lot of diverse content. But in this episode, I'll be talking to another JB, John Bowes, a.k.a. Paul Mackey. And the reason we're talking to him is because in this episode, we'll be wrapping up with the finale episode of his serial, Really Big Things. And he's got two fantastic, fantastic guest stars making appearances, and both of them have similar haircuts. And both of them are super talented guys. So anyway, I will repeat, if you've sent content, called it into the voicemail line, or emailed me stuff, the Deadpan content extravaganza is coming. Just not in this episode. I thank you for your patience, and I welcome more of your stuff. You can email it to me. It's sphericaljackm@gmail.com, or just jack@jackmangan.com, or phone it in, 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664.
Please, raise your hand if you think you'll be able to survive tonight's entertainment. Dark Age!
Some friends playing a fantasy role-playing game become trapped inside the world of Dark Age as their characters. A world filled with magic, monsters, and death. Not to mention gold, ale, and hot, flirty wenches. Dark Age is a free fantasy fiction podcast novel by Kirk Warrington. Come join the adventure at www.kirkcast.com. P.S. For any women or gay dudes out there, please substitute long sorted studs for the hot flirty winches. Thanks. Bye. Bye. See ya. Bye.
Hey, this is Mike Nelson, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep it tuned here.
Really Big Things, a serial by Paul Mackey, episode 18, Chicken. Okay, today's the day of the big assignment, said Chris. What does that mean? Breakfast, said Jack, turning his coffee cup right side up. Ooh, very close. Jeremy? Time to do the homework. Got it in one, my friend. No hard feelings now, Jack. Jeremy was at college with me, so he knows just how I, roll, huh? Chris took out a promotional packet and slid all the papers out of the folder. The trio was sitting in the front window of the Desert Rose Diner in Wilcox, Arizona. Holy crap, said Chris. What? Okay, so we know that we're going to the Chicken Heaven corporate campus, right? The belly of the beast, said Jeremy. And Milton Billy Bob Brotz ordered construction as part of his will. The Chicken Crackpot's final commandments. So Billy Bob, the sole owner, buys his birthplace, Summit, Arizona, the whole town, knocks it all down, and puts up a corporate campus complete with a giant chicken in the center. Well, the edge, said Jeremy. The center was in the middle of the glide path for the main approach at Tucson International. And today they announce what the giant chicken is for, said Chris. Across the street, Eric emerged from the Chicken Heaven franchise carrying a large haunch of blue-green meat that glistened and steamed in the morning light. Jack started to make a face, but hid it by coughing into his hand. "Well, check out what the giant chicken is for," said Chris, sliding a brochure across the table. "First United Church of Christ Chicken," read Jack, eyeing the picture of a crucified man in a chicken suit. "Billy Bob really was off his nut," murmured Jeremy. "What, the Chicken Lover's Club card and Krusty Willy the Chicken Pirate weren't sign enough?" asked Chris. Eric came in the door behind a round-faced trucker and slid into the booth bench next to Jack. "With deep-fried cheesy chicken chunkies and Aunt Mabel's famous fruit punch," read Jack, attempting to ignore Eric, "it may be the tastiest communion ever." "That's sick," said Jeremy, gaping at the hunk of bright blue meat as big as Eric's head, dripping with neon yellow gravy. "Too bad you can't smell it," shrugged Eric. Then he bit off a huge mouthful and small gelatinous yellow gobbets clung to his facial hair. "I'm not much with organized religion," said Chris, "but I gotta agree with you. Here's the investor/worshipper ID badges."
"Investor?" asked Jeremy.
"Yeah," said Chris. "Today is the first day. Invest in Chicken Heaven and worship the Chicken Christ, and you get to own a slice of the lunacy."
"Well, I'm ready," said Jeremy. "Let's get going."
"Don't you want breakfast first?" "We almost don't need to go on the grounds to get a shot," said Chris, peering upwards. As they'd approached the campus, the giant chicken had loomed on the horizon for quite some time. "Ivo got us passes. I'm sure the wait will be worth it," said Jack. Chris continued to inch forward to the gate. After another 5 minutes, they were next to get cleared through. The car in front of them pulled ahead, and the stop arm lowered. Chris braked and rolled the window down. The tall, lanky guard leaned down. He had a long, thin nose and a look on his face that said he'd rather be on his porch with a PBR and a sack of chicken and cheeses.
"May I see your event passes?"
Chris passed the tags to the guard, who peered at his clipboard, peered a second time, looked at their faces, each, closely. Then he turned to the guard booth with a beckoning gesture.
"Thank you. I'll be right back."
A short man who apparently worked on making up for his stature by increasing his girth lumbered out. They murmured to each other in low tones. Then the large man came over to the car. He barely needed to lean over. The skinny guard leaned over just behind him and to the side, grinning because he finally had some entertainment.
"I'm sorry, folks. You're going to have to head out the way you came."
"And stay out!"
"But we were told we'd be on the list," said Chris.
"Well, yes, sir, but we got two lists in the booth."
"One big list, one little list."
"The second list is an exclusion list."
"It's like Santa Claus, the nice list and the naughty list."
"That guy, he's on the exclusion list."
"He's been naughty."
"Listed for hygienic atrocities in a chicken heaven."
"He's the chicken devil."
"Do not admit under any circumstances."
"Probably peed in the chicken chowder."
"If you believe this to be an error, you can take the issue to the admin building."
"1 mile that away."
"They will address this issue at the earliest convenience."
"They ain't gonna be in until Monday."
"Have a nice day."
"I'll see you in hell, chicken devil."
Chris parked the car. "I hope this finally teaches you a lesson, Jeremy." They were on a side road about a quarter mile down the fence line from the gate. Chris unpacked his camera as they began walking back toward the chicken. Jack hung back from Jeremy and Chris so he could mutter to Eric without Chris overhearing.
"Now what do we do?" said Jack. "Those guys will never let us in now."
"Just fucking relax, Jack," said Eric, rolling his eyes. "We'll be in a snap."
Eric snapped his fingers and everything went monochrome. The entire world was suddenly hushed, frozen.
You killed all those people?" said Jack.
Eric grabbed Jack by the shoulder.
"Calm the fuck down, Jack."
Eric leaned in close, face to face with Jack.
"What color are my fucking eyes?"
I don't know, kind of a...
"Are they fucking purple?"
"They are not fucking purple."
"Good. Give me some credit here. The damn purple eyes will just release chaos into the world, and who cares who survives? This,"
he waved his arms around,
"all this is just a time distortion. Everything that isn't me or Jeremy is just really, really slow."
"You, me, Jeremy, or Chris," corrected Jack.
"What the heck is going on?"
asked Chris, waving a hand before the eyes of one of the guards frozen in place in front of the barricade arm.
"I'm not entirely sure," said Jeremy, clambering under the arm and helping Chris do the same.
"Jeremy!"
called Eric. Tell him not to pay attention to what's going on.
What? Said Jeremy. Tell him. Hey, Chris, don't worry about any of this.
Oh, okay, Jeremy. Jeremy gaped for a moment. Eric, why did that work?
You tell me, shrugged Eric. Okay, stand right about here.
Eric dragged his toe, making a line in the dust approximately directly below the chicken's head far above. Jeremy stepped into place.
Hold still, said Eric,
and Jeremy jerked suddenly.
Guys, I can't move my legs.
I know, said Eric. You need to be fixed in place so we can fine-tune the door through you.
Jack, I don't like this, Jeremy said nervously.
It'll be fine, said Jack, looking to Eric and getting an affirming nod. I've never seen this done before.
There was a brilliant, soundless flash. This is the untuned door, said Eric, as the air in front of them glowed brightly. Now, Ivo just told me before we left to tune it here.
The glow faded, and in its place coalesced an image of a dark room, lit by torch. Jack and Jeremy gaped. Lining the walls were people, hanging from their wrists. Hunched near one of them was a man with a head of thick, white, curly hair. The boy hanging there screamed and then passed out as the hunched man grunted with exertion, tugging out several feet of intestine and arraying the viscera along arcane symbols chalked out on the stone floor. Jeremy whimpered, and the man looked up suddenly and focused through the door at him. Recognition flickered across his features.
You? He raised his bloody hands to his face. And my, what company you have found.
His tongue shot out and lapped at a finger. Jeremy's whimper was now a low moan.
Eric, said Jack.
Ah, I see how it connects, said the white-haired man, lapping some more blood from his fingers. He was now advancing toward the door, one dripping hand extended.
You've saved me the bother of all...
He was cut off as suddenly the door flashed and the old man's image was replaced by what looked to be the inside of an old barn.
I told Ivo, exclaimed Jack. I said I'd play along, cooperate.
Ivo wanted some extra insurance and to prove he could do what he said. Wait, he was talking to you? Asked Jeremy, confused. Eric spun and smacked his palm into Jeremy's forehead.
Ow!
Eric looked confused and smacked him again. Ow!
Eric, what are you doing? Asked Jack.
Something's wrong, muttered Eric, almost as if Jack weren't there. You took the pills.
I took two pills, said Jeremy.
What?
Asked Eric.
I took two pills. Seeing all the talking stuff freaked me out. Chris is keeping the third one for me.
Okay, well, let's get it out and taken then.
Chris, you got that shoebox?
Yeah, Jeremy, about that.
What? Let's get the pill.
I kind of took it.
What?
Yeah, must have been some variation on the X I did back at school, though. I got nothing out of it. Sorry?
Fuck, Eric said, somewhat predictably.
So what, we're screwed?
Said Jack, as Eric rubbed at his chin and looked from Jeremy to Chris and back again.
Not necessarily, murmured Eric.
Eric clamped his thick hands over Chris's shoulders. Chris jumped as he suddenly saw Eric, then remembered he wasn't supposed to.
I hope this fucking works, said Eric, pulling Chris around until he was directly in front of Jeremy,
his back brushing against Jeremy's slight beer gut. Chris opened his mouth to speak, but Eric smacked his hand loudly into Chris's forehead like a faith healer. The door glowed uncomfortably bright, washing out the image of the hayloft. The door suddenly collided with Chris and Jeremy. A flash of white light shot upward to the giant chicken's head, and there was a tremendous thunderclap. Then all was silent, save for Eric puffing from exertion. Chris was nowhere to be seen. Jeremy's eyes darted from Eric to Jack. Eric punched Jeremy hard in the stomach.
Damn you!
He roared, as color and life slowly crept into the world around them and Jeremy went down like a sack of bricks. Jack went to hold Eric back as Eric moved to kick Jeremy, but Jack's hands slipped through Eric as Eric's foot passed through Jeremy's hip.
No!
Eric cried in frustration. Far above, the giant chicken cocked its head to the side.
Gosh, do any of you folks need to go through the door?
Jack helped Jeremy get to his feet. They both looked at Eric, who was nearly apoplectic with rage.
Supposed to. My sister. Fuck. Fuck.
Jeremy shrugged off Jack's arm and stood near Eric. that was supposed to be me? Eric sneered and spit a glob of incorporeal spittle through Jeremy's face. Jeremy turned and walked away.
Wait, said Eric. Jack, stop him. We've got...
Jack shook his head slowly, sadly, and turned to follow Jeremy.
Jack, you fucker! Get back! Stop him! Fucker! Jack!
Eric jumped up and down, spitting curses, as Jeremy walked past the car in a state of something like shock. Jack stood for a moment, watching as Jeremy went. He nodded slightly then, quickly got into the car, started it, and drove in the other direction, not looking in the rearview mirror to see the ranting Eric, nor at Jeremy slowly walking to the west.
You've been listening to Really Big Things, a serial by Paul Mackey. Music is Chronodermis by Nanochrist. Find out more at www.nanochrist.com. Send questions or feedback to reallybigthings@gmail.com.
You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
It's not that easy being
Jack Mangan.
Having to spend each day the color of
deadpan.
When I think it could be nicer being
Andrea.
Paul Mackey.
Or Brad P. from NJ.
Or something much more colorful like that. But
deadpan's
the color of spring. And
deadpan
can be cool and friendly like. And
deadpan
can be big. Like an
unrelated thought.
Or important, like
greasy jelly bean.
Or tall, like
greasy spoon comments.
When
Jack Mangan
is all there is to be, it could make you wonder why. But why wonder?
Motherfucker!
Why wonder?
Motherfucker!
I'm
Jack Mangan.
And it'll do fine. It's beautiful. And I think...
Deadpan is the way.
Okay, Deadpanites. Well, this week, our Deadpan interview is really one of our own. If you hang out a lot in the chat room, or in the comments, I don't have a chat room, on the comments page, you'll recognize John Bowes, a.k.a. Paul Mackey, a.k.a. the author of the Really Big Things serial, which... sadly, he's come to a close here in this episode, but I wanted to have John Bowes, a.k.a. Paul Mackey, on to talk about the serial and to just shoot the shit and get caught up with him and find out what's next and what got him here. So thanks for coming on, Paul. How you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello, Jack. Hello, Deadpan.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, this is the sad conclusion here with everyone parting company in separate ways.
Yes.
With pretty notable guest appearances, you know, and actually in all the episodes, not just this one. This one, you got two,
yes.
So we got, you know, the double one, and they gave you lots of audio, you know, as opposed to just one line. So okay. That's been a pretty consistent, you know, before we get into the story and all that stuff, that's been a pretty consistent thing, is having a top secret, or in this case two, top secret guest vocals on each episode.
Yes, I think we can go ahead and say that if you didn't already know, the guy who was saying chicken an awful lot was actually Scott Sigler.
Yeah. In case you haven't heard of him, he's a notable. He's got a couple of patio books out, and he's done pretty well for himself.
I think you recognize him from saying chicken. He says chicken quite a bit in other audio clips elsewhere. So.
Yes. Indeed.
And the other guy is usually a bit more musical. Actually, I think a lot of people are probably not going to have as good a guess that is in fact. Mr. George Harab.
Right. But those are two excellent, you know, I mean, which is not to downplay any of your guest vocalists, but those two guys are very busy and very, you know, highly sought, very widely sought. So, you know, very good getting those two guys, but, you know, very good getting everyone you've gotten, you know, getting Summer Brooks, getting Mike Menengay, getting, you know, the Smarty Hotties, you know, all these people you've got.
Yes, I've got quite the list. I've actually got it in front of me so that I can do at some point do a crediting sequence, that I'll probably have, just as a thank you, that I'll have, possibly not on this episode, but possibly on the next or something. And I'll cut together a little reel with, names and their voicings.
That's true. You know, actually, I did a little spoiler there because I know that you've kept them all secret until just now, and you release the official list.
Except for the occasional giddy Jack Mangan saying, "Wasn't that cool? It was J.C. Hutchins," and I really loved that T. Morris part.
So let's talk a little bit about this. Really Big Things is it's pretty gross, Paul.
Oh, it's pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The whole thing is the whole thing's been, from the start, actually a bit of an experiment, a bit of an exercise for me. I guess I can talk about the origins a little bit. The real origin is the fact that I am a notorious outline writer. I write outlines upon outlines upon outlines. I have all sorts of ideas that never go beyond that, pretty much.
Okay.
So, it was pretty much the experimental part of it was really, you know, what can I do if I'm limiting myself to a self-imposed 5 to 7 minutes for the most part, which is, you know, pretty much I talked to you ahead of time there and said, you know, that's pretty much all I'm going to steal of your time without getting my own podcast at some point. And then it's also just an exercise. I mean, this is, in fact, the longest thing that I've ever completed and actually brought to a conclusion.
Okay.
Otherwise, before that, it was a lot of fragmentary stories. I started out writing, you know, short stories about my friends, pretty much using my friends as the characters, but they were always some sort of hyper-inflated version of themselves. I'm not sure if you've seen anything like that out of me recently.
I don't know. I'll ask Jeremy if what he thinks.
Sure.
But now that's actually... That's interesting because I know that you were writing this. This was not completed when you started. You didn't have 1 through 18. But you had them outlined then, I guess is what you're saying. But you didn't have the story completed.
Yeah.
It seemed like actually I remember that you were writing episodes, you know, a week or so before they would even be recorded and released. So this was kind of the seat of your pants here.
Yeah, I kind of called it the television method. I know that a lot of television shows work with their writing pretty close up to the production schedule. I don't know that I'd really recommend it to anyone, especially if you're a procrastinator, because I don't know if you noticed the release schedule was a little bit sporadic in places. There was a brief hiatus, a lengthy hiatus between the end of, the end of October and then into like February.
Yeah, it was somewhere. I think actually it was November.
November.
I don't think it was November to February.
Just skip the holiday months.
Right. Right.
Yes, I had an outline, I was working basically from that outline. I knew exactly what beats I needed to hit in each episode, though.
See, that is interesting because I didn't get that perception as listening to it. Listening to it, it seemed like you were getting more and more experimental as you were going on. So it felt like you had kind of a simple idea that as you were going, you were just like, "Ooh, let me make this weirder. Let me take this to more interesting places, and ooh, let's try and use these bodily fluids in this episode."
You know? No, actually, a lot of those levels were pre-planned. About the only thing that I, you know, criticize myself on is that I think I really let it all go with the exorcism, if you will, the purge. I think the purge really was where it really. I don't know that I think it was really the climax of the piece in terms of the intensities, but basically, I guess I'll go back to the beginnings of it one more time, just because it sort of tells a little bit about why some of the things are so unanswered or so surreal, which is I have a set of outlines for a four novel series, like actual novel length novels, although I haven't actually written anything but outlines. And these I've been working on, these have sort of been germinating since high school, really. The very root portion of the four novel series.
Okay.
And then I was working on a outline for the 3-day novel contest, which I've never actually successfully completed or participated. I participated once and did not get far at all. But I had a 3-day novel idea. It was going to be this story about, well, I mean, it's really big things. It's the two guys. One guy is kind of a loser down on his luck. The other guy's a photographer taking pictures of big things for a coffee table book. And basically, when I first approached you, I just had that short story, which was not directly connected to Really Big Things at the time, the Quitting Time story.
Right. Yeah, the Chicken Heaven. Yeah.
Yes, I was originally written as a burger joint, and it was written for a zine called Crooked Finger out of Quebec, Canada.
Oh, okay. And so that was published then?
Yes, that had been published in a zine previously. But I rewrote it as a chicken, mostly so that I could use the chicken theme music. Specifically for that.
Now it's stuck in my head. God damn it, Paul. Now that song is stuck in my head. The chicken theme music.
Sorry about that.
All right, go on.
So really, I was picking from a Chinese menu of ideas, pretty much. There's a little bit of column A with the Quitting Time story, and then I had figured that Jeremy would work as the loser guy in the Really Big Things plot, and then I figured, hey, you know, this guy's named Jeremy, and this one guy, and one of the characters in the 4-novel story is also called Jeremy. And I worked out that they could be very easily the same character. And there's a big gap in the 4-novel series where a good 10 years passes. And this was a good place to slip in a little extra content, I thought. So I wrote basically after I had read and successfully recorded the Quitting Time and gotten that played, I conceptualized this serial to record some of the story elements of Jeremy's story that would connect, would sort of link the previous novel to the next novel.
No more F-bombs on Winging It? Well, fuck. Jack Mangan's Deadpan, where the F-bombs are still free.
Why, sure, climb into my spoon. Yeah, we're on a bit of a time crunch this week. First, Wonder Wolf, a.k.a. Master of Patience, says, "Man, I wanted some fudge, ellipsis." Alvi says, quotes, "Hey, boo, how long does it take for you to wash your hair?" Close quotes. Star breaks down into fetal position, star. Thomas says, "Just don't use a weed eater nude, ellipsis." And the final Greasy Spoon comment of the week, Just a Joe says, "I just sent Jessica back to the closet of unspeakable pleasures / voiceovers. I am no longer her favorite." And here you are with Really Big Things is completed. And, you know, it even got a Parsec long list nod, which is, you know, I'm sure that when you were starting out that was just not something you were even thinking about. So, I mean, that's a cool thing. You know, you got some notice from, you know, from the community about it.
Yes, I thought that was especially nice. I mean, as I said, I started out to experiment, to exercise myself, get myself writing so that I could forge into some of this larger concepts that I've got, these larger outlines that I have.
All right, this is going to be a twofold question. Is that what's next for what you have out there? You have these 18 episodes recorded, and, you know, they're on episodes of Deadpan all over the place, but, you know, there's what else are you going to do with them? Are you going to just release them on a website, at Patio Books, or through some other audio outlet?
Yeah, I've got an open invite for Patio Books, pretty much. T. Morris said, hey, you know, anytime, you know, just get it, you know, cut them together, do our spec, and we'll get them played. So that's probably one of the next steps. Is I needed to go back and do some of the initially I had not had scene break music, so I want to put in those scene breaks, and Evo Terra is now the guy who is clearing these stories for final release into Patio Books. And at Evo's suggestion, I'm probably going to be going, for the most part, 2 episodes per release. So it's going to be a fairly short audiobook series.
Yeah, I think that'll be good. And I think you'll you get a lot of people who will go back and revisit the series, you know, through Patio Books. And then what about what's next for you as a writer, as a podcast writer, or just as a writer? What's next? What do you want to tackle next?
Well, my very next project that I'm currently deep in the middle of is actually as a podcast performer. I have accepted a role as the main big bad in the Buffy Between the Lions audio drama at www.buffybetweenthelions.com.
Right.
Got to plug that. That series actually began on October 5th. And I'm in episodes 2 through 12, so I'm not in the October 5th episode, but everybody should, you know, catch it from the beginning. It's mm-hmm. basically a fan fiction audio drama series with a cast of literally 100 people across the globe.
And some cool people, you know, there's, you've got a good role, and I know that Brian Brown is involved.
Brian Brown is involved. Christiana Ellis is involved. A bunch of the people from the Firefly Talk The Signal.
Right.
People that are involved with those are involved in the writing and producing and some of the performing as well. So my first episode actually ran, I think, as of the airing of this particular podcast, it ran on the October 20th episode. And my first substantial appearance will be next week, November 3rd. That'll be episode 3. That's where I'm really substantially in it. I appear in episode 2, which ran on the 20th. So that's okay. That's a short term. I'm in the middle of that. We're 6 episodes into the recording schedule on the 12 episode run.
Mm-hmm.
And then my immediate writing plan is actually going to be writing one episode of the season 2 of this particular drama.
So you're already set for season 2, and all right, that's neat.
Yeah, they've got a season 2 planned. They know what's supposed to be happening in each episode, and I had a little extra extra take on one of the episodes, and they decided to slot me in as a writer on the second season.
Well, good. Yeah, that's another good bullet point on your resume then.
Yes, absolutely. But then after that, that was somewhat unexpected. As was having the major role in Buffy Between the Lions, I had auditioned for a smaller role, and they just kept asking me to read bigger and bigger parts, and eventually cast me as the big bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that you and Brian had a little fun, healthy competition going there, right? When you guys were both auditioning for this.
Yeah, so we both started out auditioning, and we were in different roles, but they eventually had us both read for Javert, the big bad.
And now, actually, all right, before, you know, you're evading the question, Mr. Mackey, but now let's take this deviation for a minute. Now, obviously, you had fun. It certainly seemed like you were having fun doing really big things. It seems like you're having fun with Buffy Between the Lines, or as the hip kids call it, BBTL. Is this something else you want to pursue, doing more voice work?
Actually, you know, the voice work is kind of a whim, and it's kind of a sidetrack. And it really, you know, if you go by my goals of having really big things exercising me to do more writing of the other projects, I'm kind of sidetracked at the moment, actually. To be honest, but in terms of the long-term plan in the Really Big Things universe, I have a fork in the road that I have to choose a fork of. Basically, the way that I've got it worked out now, I've got the four novel idea out there, and I could start in at the beginning. I could start in with book one, begin where it begins. Or I could work on a sequel to Really Big Things, which would probably be another arc of audio, shorter audio pieces. Mm-hmm. As I have it worked out, it's pretty much that I've got the first 3 books of the novel series. I've got Really Big Things is number 4. This other piece would be number 5, the sequel to Really Big Things, and then the number 6 book would wrap it all up. So it's
okay.
It's book 4 of a 6-book series, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. Amy Bowen made me promise that that book 1 would not reveal that the pills contain midichlorians, but I have no comment on the big teddy bear fight in episode 6.
That's crazy, starting with episode 4. I don't think anyone's ever succeeded at doing that. Well, that's awesome. And you know what? I'm proud and thrilled and tickled that, you know, Really Big Things came out through Deadpan. And, you know, if you ever have anything that fits, you're always welcome to send stuff in and have it come out here. I mean, obviously, there's going to be some changes around here, but it's going to be, there's always room for Really Big Things or there's always room for Paul Mackey stuff. So if you, you find you have something that fits, then you're more than welcome to come back.
Thank you very much, Jack. I just have to say, that I am extremely grateful that I had the opportunity to podcast my work on the Deadpan. I'm very grateful to the Deadpan. I'm very grateful to you, Mr. Mangan.
Well, thanks. Makes me feel like, you know, Deadpan did something, you know,
yes.
in these 80 episodes, I've accomplished something. A funny Samuel L. Jackson joke and Really Big Things. I feel like, you know.
And hey, there's that billiards thing too.
That's true. You know, I've been thinking about that. There's some kind of correlation between billiards and politics. I got to work it out.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. Best of luck to you. Keep breaking legs, you know, since we're in showbiz here. So I'll say keep breaking legs.
Absolutely.
And keep hanging around and keep everyone posted. And
okay.
Oh, and you know what? My last question before I let you go is I owe you a t-shirt, don't I?
Apparently, there was at some point a promise in one of the greasy, one round of the greasy that there would be a t-shirt involved.
All right. Well, yeah, that'll have to happen. I'm sorry for making you wait.
Well, you got to work on making all the stains just right.
So thank you for being on, Paul Mackey, and, and you'll get your stained t-shirt. Thank you again. I'll say that. Let me close by saying thank you very much for Really Big Things. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to miss it now that it's done.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Who is it?
Pizza delivery.
Come in.
Hello. Did someone here order a large sausage pizza?
That was me. But I'm more interested in the sausage than the pizza.
Well, baby. Let's get it on then.
Ooh.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mmm. Oh yeah, like that.
Ooh, the sausage is good.
You're not so bad yourself.
Ooh, baby. Mmm. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
He's bringing sexy back.
I'm stealing this stanza for you. Why the extraneous plant? Why the tabaret? Why, oh why the doily? Embroidered in daisy stitch, with margarettes, I think, and heavy with gray crochet. Elizabeth Bishop, filling station.
And this is the end, beautiful friends. I had my big Deadpan announcement that I've been teasing about, but that's going to actually come in episode number 81. That's too late in this one. So, let's do some GJB. Yeah, you know me. Our three predictions were 635, 824, and 618. And we actually had a close one this time. Pretty cool. I think we were right around 700 at midnight on Wednesday night at midnight. So the 635 is the winner, and that's Thomas. And I think that means that Thomas is the greasy jelly bean winner for this round, because he gets two. Am I right? I mean, should I be keeping track of this stuff? I don't know. So anyway, that's it. I hope you enjoyed the three interviews in a row. It was good to mix it up a little bit, but I think the next Deadpan is going to be more of what you're used to. So yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, that we're going to fall back into the rut next week. All right, stay deadpan, keep it deadpan, deadpan for life. Deadpan is the motherfucking way, and every other slogan you can think of for deadpan. I'm not coming back after the music. You cannot make me. Yep. So until next week, good night, Mush. And I'll see you in the basement of the Alamo.
Okay, here we go. Nope, sorry, can't do it.
This is one I wanted to do in the other room.